Hey everybody, today we have Roxy Fernandez on the show. This is going to be a really fun episode because Roxy holds a special place in my heart. She was my first mentor as an occupational therapy student, and then we worked together when I was a brand new practitioner. We cover a lot of topics today, and I think you'll realize just why she is so special. Roxy has an absolutely fantastic story, and a big part of it is her son Greco. As you're listening, you might even hear him in the background throughout the episode. So let's jump right in. If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life. Today, I'm going to welcome a really good friend of mine, Miss Roxy. And just to give our listeners a little bit of context, we are actually sitting right now in Roxy's fantastic clinic that she has called Zensory. And it's awesome. It's super cool. Got loads of equipment, really fun things. And so Roxy, out of everything that you have here, what would you say is your favorite piece of equipment or favorite thing to do with your clients?
Probably jump off the treehouse onto the beanbag.
Yes. So she has this, what'd you say, maybe 7-8 foot tall?
5 foot.
Is it 5? Okay. Well,
tall.
We're sitting on the ground, so it looks a little taller. But yeah, and it's really cool. And you can just like jump off of it. She has these huge crash pads, ball pits. There's an awesome slide as well. I think my favorite would actually be, oh gosh, it would be probably one of the swings. I think I'd go for the disc swing. Because I mean, when I used to work in the clinic, I would sit on the swings all day. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
We're going to get back to the clinic, but I want to rewind and have you share a little bit of your story. Let's go back to before you became an OT and give us kind of a snapshot of what your life was like and maybe what inspired you to become an OT.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for asking. Before I was an OT, I was not working in the health field at all. In fact, I lived on an island named Cozumel, where both of my children were born, and I was doing more windsurfing, jet skiing, and more things with tourists. My second son was born there, and unfortunately, he was born without oxygen and had brain damage to the occipital lobe, and what it caused was cerebral palsy. I didn't know that because when he was born, he was a premature as well, and every time I'd go to the pediatrician to have him see the baby, he just said he was fine, and I know there was things going on because I already had a first son. Mm-hmm. So I knew that he was delayed. I had no idea what was going on because I didn't have any recollection or know or therapy or even know what therapy was.
Right.
And
you were young at the time, correct?
Yeah, I was about 28 when I had him, and I didn't know much about health field related services. And so I kept on taking him to the pediatrician, and they just wouldn't pay attention to what I was saying until he was 12 months old. So I went to Mexico City with a neurologist, and doing an MRI, they saw that there was brain damage in the occipital lobe. So the doctor said he had cerebral palsy and that he just needed to go to therapy to receive OT and PT. And to me, those were just letters. I had no idea what even OT or PT was, but all I remember them telling me is that PT would be better for him. And I had no which one. And I think it's because more of his orthopedic issue, and it was more of a physical mobility issue that he has with cerebral palsy. So when he was 2 years old and I realized that living on the island, I wasn't going to get the services he needed and didn't get the support from his biological father, we moved back to Los Angeles. I moved in with my mom. I became a single parent with two little kids, one going into kindergarten and one 2.5 years old, never have received formal therapy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had gone to therapists here and there off the island, going to the mainland and understanding, you know, how to do some positionings, but really didn't get a lot of formal therapy. So there was a lot I did not know or that Greco had not received.
Right.
So coming to LA was amazing because the plate is served. I immediately got connected to the regional center. Mm. and as well as to CCS, as well as to county schools. Wow. So right away, we put him in school. He was 2 and a half, started going to school 5 days a week in a county program where they have equipment and they're equipped with teachers that know special needs. Mm-hmm. So that's the venture he started, as well as going to CCS, which is California Children's Services, that does therapy for him. And he would have physical therapy, which is PT, and he would have occupational therapy, which is OT. And then I figured out what these letters meant. And so as I was taking the therapy, that was at that point where I realized, wow, that's probably something I would want to do, is to play, because I always loved kids and always playing with kids and always wanted to hold babies and things like that and being around babies and kids. But I was never around special needs kids. And when I saw the therapist treating Greco, I said, wow, that would be something I would want to do. So that's where that inkling began.
I want to go back just a little bit, and you mentioned when you first heard about like getting the services, but you had that mother's intuition of something was going on.
Yes.
When you first got the word of the brain damage, occipital lobe damage, what, like, give us a little idea of like what went on with you.
Well, I could tell you that before he got diagnosed, what came on, and it kind of gets me teared up, is that I just didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And that I knew something was going on.
Right.
Getting those gut feelings as a parent, you know, is so important. And that's what helps me with my practice nowadays, knowing that you got to listen to your gut feeling.
Right.
And my gut feeling was telling me one thing, and the doctors were telling me something else. So when he got diagnosed, there was a relief. A relief, because I knew exactly what it was and what we could do. And that there was possibilities of doing something.
Yeah.
And that there was kind of like a solution.
Yeah.
You know, to what can be done. So it was a relief.
Okay.
And because I felt like I had gone through the hardest part, because basically his first year of life was really difficult. It was hard for him to latch on. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a lactation consultant. It was hard for him to even consume all his volume, and he had poor ability to eat all the time. You know, he couldn't eat as like other kids, but we didn't have feeding therapy. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea. So that first year I was just kind of finagling it on my own. So when I got the diagnosis, it was a relief. And it just seemed like after that, I was starting to put the puzzle of the pieces of the puzzle together. Mm-hmm. So I could say it was relief. A little bit of sadness, you know, knowing that I'm going to have a disabled child. And, you know, my hopes and my dreams were thinking, it's nothing. I don't want it to be anything. I wish I could believe the doctors, but that gut feeling wouldn't let me. Right. And just knowing that he might not be able to walk down the aisle one day, or even go to school, mm-hmm. or something, because by this time he was about 2 years old, and I truly believed he was intellectually disabled. And he has optic nerve atrophy where the brain damage was, so he had poor vision. So I just thought it's that he was just not paying attention or even smart enough to attend interactively. So so sometimes I would, you know, have a pity party and I'd cry and then I'd be okay. And then I'd go on with life, because, you know, you get busy with having two kids and, you know, having the joys. But there's one thing I could say, that it's just like I wouldn't change anything if I had to do it again.
I love that. And I think the reason I knew it was going to be a tough question to ask, but I felt like there are other people out there that are going through it, have gone through it, and down the road will go through it. Yeah. And really having that honesty and kind of that rawness of somebody that's gone through it, that's been there, the emotions, everything of like what is going on, and just trying to process everything. That's going to connect with somebody that's listening to this right now. They might not know what to do, but they're going to listen and go, you know what? I'm right. I know something's going on. The doctors don't believe me, or there's somebody else out there understands what I'm going through.
Exactly.
So thank you. I knew that was going to be
good. You're welcome.
Just think I was going to make you cry this early on.
You're good.
Okay, so then let's go back. You know, you realize that playing with kids would be super fun. You were starting to learn about the different therapies that your son was receiving. When was that aha moment of OT, occupational therapy, that's it. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, it took quite many turns because when I came back to LA to live with my mom, I told her that I would only be with her for 6 months and then I'd go out and get a job and I'd be independently taking care of myself. I had been out of the country for about 10 years, so I wasn't hireable. And it was probably a good fortune that no one did hire me or did I got a job that realizing that I needed to go back to school.
I am so glad you didn't get a job because otherwise a lot of kids and a lot of parents would be missing out on beautiful therapy. So
thank you. And thank you for that. Well, my lazy brain didn't want to go back to school. And I was thinking I just wanted to make money and to be able to be independent. But so I decided that I would go back to school. And I was thinking of doing physical therapy because that's what I thought was better because PT was a stronger therapy service for my son because it was an orthopedic issue. As I was venturing school and finding out about the process and already started going to school to do my prereqs, but in my brain, I was going to do physical therapy and that's what my major was at the time until I was speaking to the OTs. The occupational therapists. And a couple occupational therapists happened to be working with Greco when I was talking about my decision going to school. And they convinced me that I should go to OT school because I could do more, I don't want to say more things, but it's more well-rounded that not only do I get to work with his physical being, but also with their functional activities, which are play. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And that's when I decided to be an occupational therapist.
Yeah, well, okay, so now I need to thank your mom, and yes. I need to thank those other OTs that convinced you to do
it. They were the OTs from CCS.
Yeah, exactly. If you're listening, thank you. So then you went to school, you know, went through the whole process, you graduated, and what happened after that? You're still dealing with your son, you're going to his therapies, you're dealing with life being a mom, caring for your son, going to school, then becoming a new therapist, and now all of a sudden you have this wealth of knowledge about his diagnosis and life and occupations and balance. Where were you as kind of your first couple years out of school?
Well, my first couple years out of school, I don't feel like I really knew what I needed to know to practice with children. I feel like it was just a trial and error thing, just practicing, not knowing what I was doing. Good thing I had some mentors around me, but I really didn't know the difference of what was happening like with my son because I was still learning the whole process because I truly believe that when I went to school, I learned a whole different language and we learned how you can use these services with so many different ways and how to help people within occupational therapy, but it wasn't specific to what I wanted in pediatrics. So there was a lot of learning that I still needed the first couple of years. So I truly believe that I was still in the learning process and not seeing anything that I would be able to, my son would be able to benefit from me because it was, I was still kind of green.
And you were, at this time, you were working in pediatrics?
What, luckily, throughout my jobs, I started as an intern since they liked me and they knew that I was going to work the holidays. They wanted to hire me so that they created a position for me
there. They sucked you in.
And I, because they knew I was going to work and it was with the adults at the TCU because they always needed coverage over the holidays that most of the OTs wanted to take off. So I was an eager beaver, so they were happy to have me there.
Right.
So I started working with adults.
And will you explain, you just said TCU, if somebody doesn't know what that is.
The TCU is the transitional care unit that's a step down from the hospital after surgeries where they go and have rehabilitation so that they could either go home independent or with a caregiver safely home.
Okay. So you started as an OT. Nowhere near kids.
Nowhere near kids. And my internships, I did do one with pediatrics, but it wasn't enough so that I could even take on a child and even know what to do with it without any learning or input. At that point, you know, I started working with adults and then I knew there was one OT that did pediatrics out of the whole hospital. And she only was part-time. And so then whenever she was around, that I would finish my work as quick as possible, and I would go and watch her. And so she worked in ICU, which is the neonatal intensive care unit, where there was one OT and one PT that was working there. And they were quite territorial, if they're listening to, I love you still, but I started weaseling my way in so I would finish my work as good as possible and I would go and help them out. So I became the shadow to this OT. And every time she needed a nipple or warm up milk, she showed me all that. I started being her little gopher so that she really liked me being around because I was helping her out. And so then I would come in on my days off and do that. Mm-hmm. So one day they realized that I shouldn't be in the hospital on my day off without clocking in working. So my director gave us permission to train me in the NICU. And I was able to work in the NICU for 7 years. So luckily, I only worked with adults for about 6 months to a year before I transitioned over to pediatrics.
Where your heart really was.
Yeah, where I knew where I wanted to be with occupational therapy.
I think that's a really fascinating aspect that you were just talking about, where you had your job and you were probably swamped seeing tons of clients, tons of paperwork, learning how to be an OT. And then you were actually carving time out of your schedule where you weren't getting paid. You were putting other things on the back burner so you could go learn being in the NICU and start learning about kids. I think that's amazing. And I think a lot of people struggle maybe not knowing quite how to get in places if they don't have the experience. And what you're saying here is like, just go. Put yourself out there. Be present and learn. And then all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, Roxy, this is where you need to be. This is where your heart is.
Join the club and get with those pediatric therapists.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was very fortunate to not have to ever apply for any of my jobs since I was an OT. Another fortunate that happened was when I was learning how to do pediatrics with the pediatric OT, she started giving me some patients still under her supervision. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't many. And then the question came up is like there was regional center patients. And so I got permission from the director and everything. And I did all the paperwork and I was able to get opportunities to start doing kids in home. So at that point, I was able to start working in pediatrics full on. I was working in the NICU. I was taking outpatients. I wasn't working with adults anymore at the hospital. I was doing in-home, and I didn't even have to apply for any of them. And I truly believe it's because I'm blessed because of my disabled child that just came and that this was the avenue I had to take.
Right.
You know, this is the way I needed to go into pediatrics where my heart is.
Right. And I know the two of us, we go way back.
Yes.
I've known you now.
10 years?
Almost, yeah. Yeah, 9, 10 years, something like that.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing that I know about Roxy, it's that when she puts something out into the universe, it happens. Mm. And clearly, I mean, at this point, we didn't even know each other. And it, all of this, it's just, you're putting yourself out there. You're doing a good job. You're being you. You're showing your passion. And people are like, they're saying, this girl's good. We like her. We want her. Like, there's something there. And that is so truly special, you know? And I know this is still continuing to this day. I have a question, and I want you to be honest with this, because I know I went through it, and I know any new grad and anybody that's been practicing for a long time, when you're fresh out of school, you're learning, you know, you're a sponge, you're taking in things, like, you don't know everything. Hell, I still don't know everything. Right. But when was it that you were like, it clicked? It all made sense. I mean, you have these amazing opportunities of various areas that you're working in, all with pediatrics, but lots of things going on.
Yeah.
When was that moment that you were like, I got this. This is where I'm at, and this is where I want to go?
Well, I could say that it was at that moment where I said, I think I got this, because there's always learning to do in this profession that I'm still learning even after almost 20 years. But at that point, it was probably, it was about between 4 to 5 years after practicing there, you're getting a handle on it, that you're figuring it out. It's like, okay, I know what I'm doing is right. I might not know how to express it or how to even verbalize, which I can't even talk now, to what I'm doing. But I knew what I was doing was right because we could see it in the difference of the child. So that's about what time I started learning about what sensory integration was. And that's when I started going, aha moment, thinking, oh, this is what it's about. But it was taking a lot of continuing education.
Okay.
I took probably 3 to 4 courses a year. That was the piece that really made a lot, started making a lot of sense, is going to continuing education, because I didn't have a strong supervisor or a mentor in pediatrics, which I would recommend anybody to get, because otherwise you are not sure if you're doing it the right way. And with being able to talk to other OTs in pediatrics, or even other PTs, it helps, because otherwise you feel like you're out there in the universe like this lone star.
I'm going to jump in here for a second. I second that completely. And that's something that I always tell my students and any new grads, anybody that comes my way, volunteers. And I'm like, your first 5 years, 3 years out of practice, get a good supervisor.
Yeah.
Get that mentorship. Even if it pays a little less.
Good advice.
Because if you can build solid skills, you can go anywhere in life. Mm-hmm. Especially in that critical time when you are just taking in everything. But if you don't get that, you're always going to be doggy paddling of like, am I doing this right? I think I'm okay. I'm kind of breathing. You know, and you really want to make it where your skills are building, your confidence is building.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I had a fantastic mentor fresh out of school.
Thank you.
And so, I give that advice to anybody that comes my way. And of course, going back to the kind of the money piece, it's not that you don't want to advocate for yourself and get what you should be getting paid, but you also want to make sure that that mentor piece is there and that you have that support moving forward.
I totally agree. Because even after about 6 years of practice where I truly believed I had a handle of it, that's when I decided to open up my own practice. And you're going to be able to treat a lot more kids. And that was the reason I did it, is because I wanted to be able to maximize the children and to be able to see as many more children as possible, which was my mission. Mm-hmm. And that's when I created the company Greco's World. And Greco's World is named after my son who was born with disability. His name is Greco, and I always wanted to name it after him because it's his world that he brought me into to be able to realize this. Once I opened up the first Greco's World, I still didn't know what I was doing all the time doing sensory work, because I was just really getting a handle of what sensory integration was. And that's when I really started taking all the deep, strong courses of sensory integration, like the sensory integration praxis tests. And I took those courses, I think I took the perspective course 3 times before it wasn't going all over my head. And then the other courses I took twice, because once you take it once, you could get it again for 50% off. And I took advantage of it because I did not have a mentor. And so it was really hard for me to be able to know that I'm doing what I'm doing and continue growing in this field with pediatrics in sensory integration without having the education. Mm-hmm. So that was a big piece. So at that point is when I opened up a sensory integration clinic. And when I opened up my first place, it was a small little place. It was the garage of a building. And my first full-time therapist is you. And that's how we started a team.
OTP9.
It was you and I and our very good aides, Shirley and Dorota. And they were just such a compliment that that's when we decided to grow the team. And so we started hiring more part-timers, and we realized we were growing out of that space. In fact, I'm sure I could have been okay in that space, but we needed a little bit more room because we didn't have much of an office or a waiting room, and we just had the sensory little room area that we did. So,
well, and if I remember correctly, it started out with mainly regional center, mainly younger kids. And mm-hmm. then all of a sudden we started seeing more school age kids and some older kiddos. And so we needed bigger climbing equipment.
That's
right. We needed a larger area that we could actually really challenge their body and do a whole lot more than we could in smallish room.
Exactly. With tiny little chairs and little cushions. Exactly. And that's when I went out looking for a new spot, and I found this one miraculously when I was washing my car and walking my dog. And I looked at it and I said, this is it. And I remember going in there and showing all the girls this space, and They didn't see what I saw. And
so I was wondering if you remembered that. I was like, I walked in and I was like, I don't know what she sees in this place. I'm like, I trust you, Roxy. But at that point, I think I was within my first 6 months of practice. And so I was just like, sure, all right, I'll support you.
And I remember finding this space, and I remember we did a little bit of construction work. Mm-hmm. We hung a lot of swings. We set up sinks, space areas. We even put up a pool in the parking lot. And it was a 3,000 square foot gym, and we were able to work with older children, school age children, babies of all ages, and we even were able to run a summer program mm-hmm. for disabled children within that space. And so the practice had grown, which was amazing. And I think that was one of my biggest learning curve, was watching the therapists. Because we had this little mezzanine where I would be able to sit above upstairs from the office area and look down to see the whole clinic area and the gym and be able to see the therapists working. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started getting keen on my observational skills and seeing what was going on with the child without being hands in. Because when you take a step back, you could see a lot more than when you're in the mix of things. Then I would go back and we'd powwow with the therapist and we'd learn about what you were doing, what you didn't see, what I saw from afar, is really helped me learn so much more about sensory integration and about treating children of all different disabilities. Mm-hmm. So I have to thank all of you guys for teaching me. And I knew what needed to be done with a child. And I still had so much more to learn.
Don't we all? Yeah. You feel like you get really good at something and then you see something else and you're like, oh my goodness, yeah. Like that is something else I'm adding to my tool belt. That is something that maybe it's a new perspective, a new awareness of it. But I think in our profession, we do a lot of talking about being a lifelong learner. We are constantly learning. Every single day we're learning something about ourselves, something about our clients, something about our clients' families, something about our families, right? Yeah. Every day you just start to kind of put the pieces together and really kind of get a better handle on life and really having that understanding of like what's important, what needs to get done, what is just noise that we can just let it just blow over and it will pass.
And that's how I was able to realize that I had specialties. I now have a specialty in sensory integration therapy. I now have a specialty in feeding. I now have a specialty in with children with behaviors. And I never even thought I would even know about that. And I even did some continuing education about that. Never went to school as a behaviorist. But just learning about behaviors and children was so important, because you can't take the behavior away from the child. It's normal. It's a developmental thing. So that at that point, I could say that I had specialties. Mm-hmm. And now I've had these specialties that I've been working with for almost 20 years, and I'm still learning.
I'll share a little story that I remember when I was working with you. And I remember that this client came to me and they were asking my opinion, and they spouted out some acronym. And I sat there and I was like, I had no idea.
I remember
no idea what they were talking about. And I was like, I felt this sense of guilt. I felt this sense of like, I should know this, right? Like, I'm a therapist. I should understand this. And I don't really remember how I handled the situation. I think I was just like, oh, let me go talk to my supervisor about this because I want to get her take on it. So I walked up to Roxy and I was like, Roxy, what is? And I said whatever the acronym was. And she's like, I don't know.
I have no idea.
I remember at that moment, and you know this, like,
and
I mean, this
was
stands out.
PVL.
Oh, see, I'm like, I don't even remember
I
what it was.
I remember it clearly because you came to me and she said, the child has PVL. Do you know what that is? And I'm like, I have no idea.
And that, like, it stood out to me so much because I was like, I looked up to you and I was like, Roxy knows everything. And when she said she didn't know it, I was like, it's okay. If she doesn't know it, it's okay that I don't know it.
Right.
And I can go look it up. And then, like, we looked it up and it was like, oh, really?
Like, and oh, it was okay. Periventricular leukomalacia. So we were just...
Yeah, and that is such a good tip for, again, going back to, like, new grads or even somebody that maybe is switching fields, switching right. avenues that they're working in, that you might not always know, and that's okay, you know?
Yes.
Just go look it up. Go talk to somebody else and figure it out together.
And that's what I love about OT. It's that it's always exciting because you don't always know. I think I would be bored if I knew everything. In occupational therapy, there's always learning to do. I've been doing this for 20 years and not any of my clients are the same, you know, and I'm realizing that even if I've seen children with the same diagnosis, let's pick autism, and 10 autistic kids can come in here, you would not do the same treatment
right.
with all of them.
Right.
And they're always going to be different. And that's exactly. one thing about occupational that I love, that you never get bored because there's always learning to do.
Right. Exactly. And honestly, I feel like this is tying into kind of your life's purpose and your life's mission, that things were bouncing around. You jump one way and then all of a sudden something else would happen,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
you would just kind of go with it and really just open your arms to, like, whatever was going to happen to you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, like, being part of that instrumental part. You know, we're a team. You know, mm-hmm. we're all one in this world, and it's just the same with the child. You know, like, we can't know everything, so it's good to, like, be humble and know, okay, I know I don't know, so let's learn on what I don't know that I don't know.
You know, I feel like over the years, I've had this realization of, like, OT and occupational therapy is really being the glue, you know, where we can come in and we're going to hear bits and pieces from other professionals, teachers, parents, anybody that's involved in specifically pediatrics, it would be the child's life. But again, if we're talking about adults, it could be anybody. And really being able to tie all the pieces together and at least make attempts to make it make sense and
yeah.
give direction, give hope. Give this perspective of this is where we can get you. This is where we yeah. can go from here.
Yeah. I like how you said that as occupational therapists, we kind of are the glue. Because, and that's what I love about occupational therapy, is that we could work on pretty much anything and everything. Whether it's walking and gait, like PTs, what we work on is not their gait or their walking ability, but their ability to perceive their proprioception through their sensory input, and that's part of OT. Or them to be able to walk and carry something, or walk to be able to function, and that's part of OT. So that's what I love, that any services the child gets, there's a part of it that we can contribute as occupational therapists. And I think it's a vital point of the team, mm-hmm. as well as having their opinion and ours to be able to create this thing right. again for the quality of the life of the child.
Exactly.
I love it.
Yeah. So we're gonna cycle back here a little bit. We've been talking about Greco's World. We were talking about that massive clinic. But if anybody's been listening from the beginning, I've mentioned that we are sitting at Zensory. So where are you now? It's been a couple years since Greco's World. And explain to our listeners, like, what is going on and what was your vision, and really, like, give them a snapshot of what this place, this awesome, amazing place is.
Well, I just want to say wow of where I'm at now after all these learning and where we've been and where we've gone. And now that I've opened up this new place a year ago named Zensory, which kind of came out as a secondary dream. I wanted to bring in a different piece. What I have now is I want to bring in more mindfulness, more peace, zen into children's and the family's life, because I know a lot of this, knowing you have a disabled child, someone's delayed, or they suddenly have a sensory issue or something, there's always anxiety tied around it. And you can't label it on a child, but they sure have these anxiety-like behaviors that they're always stressed and the parent is stressed. So what I want to do is I now tying into the practice of occupational therapy is teaching how to be in Zen, no matter what. And so I found the idea of Zen sensory, but then it just kept on being too long. And as I kept on dreaming of this place, Zensory popped up. So that's why I named it Zensory. So I wanted it to be a multi-sensory environment where parents could come in and they could feel bliss. So we have the oils diffusing. You know, we have the nice cool colors. We have bean bags. We have very comfortable couches in the waiting room where the parents could just gel. We have little rooms on the side where if a parent comes in with their sibling or a child or a baby that is crying while the other sibling's trying to get therapy, we have private little rooms so that they could play with their baby because the siblings want to look at this place and they want to play. So what we did is we're creating Zensory as a family place where they could come in and be in Zen and to be able to chill. And what I want to start in my next level now that I've gotten the practice running here, the next level to Zensory is starting to do yoga with families and having the families come in for yoga time while their child plays or does yoga along with the parent. Also, since we have a sensory integration clinic where we have hanging swings, what we're going to do is do hanging yoga. We have hanging.
Please tell me this is where we're going.
We have equipment where we could do yoga, hanging yoga, where not only the parent could do it, but the child wants to try it, which is also relaxing and getting them understanding of what Zen is like. So now in my practice, I'm starting to teach breathing with the child. I throw in a little downward dog, a little cobra. We pretend we're trees holding with one leg up and we get the child grounded. I'm starting to teach them meditation positions and breathing and even doing the hum and the breaths and the sounds to be able to have that Zen feeling as we do when we do meditation. And that's what I'm want to tie in into this practice now. I'm not sure exactly what it's going to look like, but I'm putting it out there.
Right.
And so that's what the next level is to have like maybe mommy and baby classes for yoga or just evenings for families to come in and play as they do meditation or yoga or just swing.
That's just fantastic. And I think it's such a really interesting integration between becoming grounded within the sensory integration, you know, the sensory framework, but then also having that mindfulness piece and acknowledging the anxiety or the emotionality or whatever is going on with the child. And not only with the child, but also with the caregivers, with the siblings, with potentially maybe the grandparents, where all of having a child that has a special need or is just has something that needs a little work, needs to be improved upon, and how much one little thing could disrupt the family and really kind of bringing them back into a place of comfort, a place of happiness, a place of connection.
Exactly. And this is something that I want to be able to teach not only the family and the children, but something that they could have tools that they could take out with them in their real life, you know, out in that world where they have issues or in the classroom where they can't even ground themselves. So I teach them tools that they could take anywhere.
Right. So I have a question for you. We've talked a lot about really amazing things of occupational therapy and why we love our jobs. What would you say is your favorite thing about OT?
My favorite part of OT is that we do get to do sensory integration therapy. And that OTs are the ones, the professionals on this. So it's kind of like we have our own niche and we have the monopoly. And that's probably my favorite part is this knowing the sensory integration system. And my most favorite part is that knowing that we are influencing the nervous system and that we have control over that and that we can help the children take control of that through this practice. That's my most favorite thing is knowing about sensory integration.
Yeah, because I think a lot of times it's overlooked if you're unfamiliar with sensory integration.
Completely.
And you might just think that the kid is having a behavior outburst. You know, they're having a tantrum, they're having a meltdown, and you just say, stop it, you know, don't do it.
Or they're saying
they're
aggressive-like type behavior.
Yep, yeah, aggressive or withdrawal. I mean, this could present in so many different ways. And oftentimes these kiddos kind of get labeled as the trouble child or the isolated child. And being able to really share that education of what sensory integration is, what sensory processing, the fundamentals of the sensory system. I've had it so many times where the parents of my kiddos, you see the light bulb go off and they're like, oh my goodness. I've seen that happen a million times. I didn't realize it was because of X, Y, and Z. And then all of a sudden you're gearing them, you're shifting their perspective, you're tuning them in to be able to read the signals of their child.
Yeah. Also another very favorite thing in OT is when you're speaking to a parent that comes in and their child has a sensory processing issue and no other diagnosis, no other problems, where their spouse is telling them that there's nothing wrong, that the mom is just crazy or that she's neurotic and that she's just trying to think, make things up of the child. And the mom who's been with the child all day understands that there's just something, and like going back to that gut feeling. Mm-hmm. And my favorite thing is that when I tell the parent, yes, it is a sensory processing disorder because of X, Y, Z, it kind of gives them relief. Like saying, I knew I wasn't going crazy. And that she goes, like, I just have a parent that came in. And in fact, I know her from my son. She was a friend of the family at age as my son's age. Well, she now has a beautiful child, and she was having some little issues, and everyone was saying, oh, she's fine, she's fine, she's beautiful, she's perfect,
she'll grow out of it,
she's fine, you're just neurotic. Yeah. And when I saw the little girl, I could really see that there was true anxiety, and she just had a gravitational insecurity and a lot of fears that we would call fears, but you can't tell the child is a fear, but it's just an insecurity that the child has, that the parent still had to hold her and really coddle her at such an older age, that the parent knew and the mom knew what was going, there was something, but she had no idea. And just learning about a sensory processing issue just opens up this whole new world to be able to explain to others what is going on so that she knows that she's doing the right thing for her child.
Right. Yeah. So what would you say, now that we've been saying all these good things, what would you say is one of the hardest parts of being an OT? And I'll even throw it out there, if it is, you know, maybe one of the hardest parts of being a parent of a child with a special need and an OT. And you can have two different answers, however you want to answer that.
Well, you just kind of touched an emotional button. The hardest thing working with children with disabilities is probably losing them when they pass. And some of them, you know, you don't want to say you're happy they are, but that they just were so severely disabled, that their quality of life was so poor. But just having all these hopes through rehabilitation that the child is going to continue advancing when they do pass, that's probably my worst things.
I said it in the beginning, like, I appreciate your honesty because I hear you on that, and I unfortunately have gone through it as well, and had a child on my caseload who passed just last November.
Wow.
Due to cancer.
Wow.
And that the kid was 2 years of age. Mm. And I hear what you're saying. I'm glad that it happened because he's in a better place now. Didn't make it easy at the time.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, when they're going into pediatric therapy, you don't think about that. When you're working with older adults, that's part of it, you know? It's the end of the lifespan. You have that awareness going in. But I never thought that I'd ever have to deal with it going into pediatrics. Yeah. And I remember the first couple times that it happened that I was like, wait, what? Like, this, what is going on? Like, my mind was blown. I just didn't understand it. Unfortunately, I mean, it is a piece. It's an extremely realistic piece. But again, like, we can kind of look back of like what we were able to do for that child, for that family, the hope that we were able to instill, even if it was a sense of calmness, even if we did absolutely nothing except give them a shoulder to cry on.
Yeah.
Give them somebody that will sit there and chat with them and look at their child for a child. And that's it. or doing great and, you know, crazy things and making tons of progress. You know, I'm at a loss for words. Like, this is, it's tough, but it's real. Oh, gosh. Yeah. You're going to get me, too.
Yeah, let's move on from that one.
I know, right? Oh, man, I didn't know you were going to go there.
I didn't either. And that just, you know, it's like, I feel like really being real right now. But also, having a child with a disability is not easy, mm-hmm. you know. Having children is not easy, period, you know, and especially one with disabilities. I have one that has no disabilities and one with disabilities. Sometimes I wonder which one's easier to manage, right? Or having him to understand me. But that's besides the point. But if I knew what I knew now, I think his process would have been different mm-hmm. because there was many things I did not know when he was starting to go to therapy and going to schools. I graduated when he was probably about 8 years old.
Okay.
So there was still a lot I didn't know until he was about probably 15, 16, when I started really getting a grip of what could have been for him that did not happen. Mm-hmm. So he has legal blindness. He has 20/200 vision. And so knowing that, I wouldn't have kept him in the county school. I would put him in a blind school.
Okay.
I did not know that he had good cognition. Knowing what I know now, I can see a baby that does not speak, who's nonverbal, and I could see when they're smart or not. Right. And now seeing, remembering the signs of my child, I realize, wow, those were signs that he was smart and he was trying to speak out, but he couldn't because he didn't speak until he was like around 5 years old. Mm-hmm. So that's probably another hard thing, that knowing that now what could have been done back then would have been different.
Right.
Also, when he was born, we didn't give him formal therapy until 2 years. So that was crucial, losing 2 years of mm-hmm. therapy, which is so important. Me working now with babies that have probably the same situation as my son, starting to work with them at 4 and 5 months old,
right,
which makes a huge difference in life.
Definitely.
So that's probably another hard thing mm-hmm. that I've discovered that have now that I know so much.
But I think you have the right to be hard on yourself for that. But one thing that I always say is embrace your mistakes.
Yeah.
Embrace the past. This isn't a mistake. Embrace your past. Because if it wasn't for him, and if it wasn't for everything that led you to where you are now, you wouldn't be here.
Exactly. And just realizing now that I now know more than the therapists that were treating him back then.
Right.
That they did not know and did not tell me any of the things that I know now that I do tell the parents. You know, for example, he has cerebral palsy. So they do a different type of treatment with kids that have orthopedist issues, that they go through these certain programs, but they don't take them to therapy like sensory integration therapy or sensory integration gyms or places where they could really use like more arts and crafts. It's more formal, just exercises and positioning, which was very boring to my son that he refused doing. So I really didn't know how else to tap into what ignite him until now, which he's almost 28, but it's never too late to learn.
Exactly.
So now I am able to tell other parents what he didn't get that their child can get with my experience and my knowledge that I got from Greco. So that's one thing I hugely embrace is all that knowledge and experience that I have now to be able to share it with so many more parents so that they can have the right therapy for their child.
So I have a couple more questions for you. I would love to hear what advice you have. And this is a two-part question here. First, for therapists that are working in pediatrics, how they approach a parent of a child with a special need. And do you have any advice being yourself a therapist, but also being a parent?
Yes.
And then I also want to know, do you have advice for other parents with a child or children with special needs?
Yeah. Well, the advice I would give to the therapist, be open and honest and to be yourself and not pretend any pretenses. And just to be open of what your thoughts are in a very graceful and a diplomatic way. But to be honest and truthful. Because sometimes we understand that some parents we have aren't as open as most people. There's some people that need a little more coddling that we always think we have to walk on eggshells. Don't do that.
Right.
Open yourself up and be courageous and kind.
Right. Yeah.
And that's my advice to the therapist.
Right.
To the parents, my advice is to always see what your child can do, not what they can't do. Because that's what I usually look at. Because the therapist would always say, he can't do this, he can't do that, he won't do this, he won't do that. And so those are the things I kind of hung on to. And for years, I mean, I remember he was 4 years old and he was starting to start chatter. He had some words. He really wasn't fluent talking until 5. But I remember at 4 years old, I took him to the CP clinic. I wanted to take him there and look at the back doctor. If there's surgeries, what could we do? Because he can't walk, he can't stand, he can't hold himself, he can't sit up, he can't do these things. And I went there with that mindset. Mm-hmm. And he opened up my mind. The orthopedist doctor that works on all those physical things and impediments said, why don't you look at his personality? Look at him. He wants to say hi. Why don't you concentrate on his social, emotional, mm-hmm. and his other aspects, maybe music or something? Why are you concentrating so much on this? At that moment, I realized that I was looking at more of what he can't do, of the things he can do. He's quadriplegic. I have to transfer him to go to the bathroom, to get to bed. I have to dress him. We have to bathe him. We have to help him eat and everything, especially if it's soup. But you know what? There's a lot of times where you could set him up and he could finger feed, or even give him a fork or a spoon, and it makes a huge mess. But you see the success with him, and he could do a lot. So there's things I'm seeing he can do now. Before, I would say he was never interested in doing anything. Mm-hmm. Just lately, he's been doing paintings, you know.
Ooh, I want to see these.
And also, he's been coloring. And, you know, if you look at these paintings and you'd look at it of a point of view of something that you would want to buy or who did it, you would say it looked like a child of 2 years old or 1 year old doing it. And my 27-year-old is doing it on his own and independently. Right. And those are priceless to me because he is functional. Yep. He is doing something. And even for him to wheel himself a foot to be able to get his own water, he is very successful with that. In fact, he feels proud about it. And that's those things I'm looking at now. So for parents, my advice is to look at things they are able to do.
Right.
And enjoy the child for who they are, not for who they're not.
Wow. Again, I'm speechless. Roxy, this has been absolutely amazing. I've loved this. I love every time that we get together. But something about this conversation, it's inspired me to go out tomorrow and do even better than I did today. Oh. You know, do even better than I did last week and everything. And I hope that this will inspire our listeners and really kind of shed some light, shed some perspective, experience, all of these things that you are just so wonderful about, just opening your arms and sharing with everybody and being open and really honest about your experience and your life. I cannot thank you enough.
Oh, thank
this
you.
Has been so cool. So it's been a pleasure having you on. Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are 3 easy ways to let us know. 1, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. 2, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. 3, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.